You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
You're impossibly fast and strong. Your skin is pale white and ice cold. Your eyes change color. And sometimes you speak like you're from a different time. You never eat or drink anything. You don't go out in the sunlight. How old are you?
17.
How long have you been 17?
A while.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got an arm!
Make love in a hammock!
What?
Hello and welcome to Film Actually, episode 66 for the 27th of November, 2011. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Not bad, man. It's weird recording this on a different day, but there you go.
Sometimes things have got to give.
I'm so glad, by the way, you opened with that clip, because it's been so long since I've seen that film, I had forgotten just how bad the dialogue is in that film.
No kidding.
Oh, dude, like I was just listening to it going, wow, this is truly tragic.
I actually have avoided watching this film ever again. I actually vowed I would never watch Twilight again, but I had to go through it last night to find the opening clip. And I'm going through it going, there is nothing I want to use. But then I came to that and I thought, yeah, it's just because it's got a good ending point where it goes, a while. Anyway, we are also joined by a very special guest in studio today, Josh. We have the lovely Miss Robin Smith with us.
I'm a huge fan of your work.
Thank you very much. It's a delight and a pleasure to be here.
For those who don't know who Robin Smith is, first and foremost, the sister.
Shame on you.
Shame on you.
Because you obviously don't read enough of the site.
Absolutely. First and foremost, the sister of Katrina Smith, who's been on the show often. But most importantly, she has been our Twilight Zone correspondent for the last, 9 months? Something
Twilight
like that.
Twilight Zone, I like
Not
that.
Twilight Zone, that's a... See, I'm so against
it. But I like it, because it kind of puts it in its own world, which is kind of where Twilight fans live.
I always wondered if there was some way I could, like, sandbox them off the rest of the site.
When can I come out? When can I come in? I can come in soon, can't I?
You can come in soon, yeah. We're going to let you back in the door after the next film.
Okay. I can do other things. I really can.
If you haven't read Robin's work, go to the site and search for Twilight, and you will find, at the moment, three articles. The fourth one is going up this week, which are very long-form essays about Robin's opinions of all of the Twilight films. And they are very, very, very amusing.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I love them. And when I get them, I wade through them going, they are just so much fun, because they really do kind of highlight everything I feel about this series.
It takes so long because of the blood and the sweat and the tears that are actually, you know, infused into the...
And
into
this
the,
one you sent through like four versions.
I had to get it just right.
Just right. Yes, if you haven't guessed by now, this is our annual Twilight show. It's a forced upon event that we have been putting up with for the last, this is our fourth year now.
Obviously. I hate you, Dave.
I know,
just
Josh.
Letting you know.
I will say this though, Josh. Oh no, because we actually went back and watched the first one. I was about to say, you weren't on the first one we did, but then on the second one, I made you go back and watch it, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
And it's not because I like Twilight. Let's get that very clear. It's because it's kind of a cultural zeitgeist at the moment, and we kind of have to cover it, even if we don't like them.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, those subjects at school that you just have to do, even though you find them, like, totally risible.
Yeah, the ones that you know, like maths, where you know that, you know, like, you don't like them and there's a whole bunch of crap in them that you really don't actually want to learn, but you know that you're going to have to, because if you don't, then you can't talk about them.
Yeah.
And let's just not mention the Peloponnesian Wars, okay?
All right. If the audience hasn't guessed by this stage, we are going to be reviewing later in the show the Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 1. And let me just get this off my chest right now. just like Harry Potter before it, I hate this new trend of splitting these films into two parts because they make them virtually unreviewable. How do you review half a film?
It's easy. You just turn up later, 12 months later, with your money, and everything's fine.
Yeah,
that's it.
That's the way they're looking at it. Anyway. Absolutely. All right, so we're also going to do a little bit of film news. Not very much, because I have a feeling that we're going to get talking on Twilight. So we've kept news to an absolute minimum. But later we also have a brand new list of five. This week we're doing five damsels in distress movies, which is kind of fun, I think. And really, you can interpret this any way you like. But, the concept, we don't see it so much anymore because we have strong female leads and so forth. But, there was a staple of film.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The hero went to save the damsel. That was what it was all about.
And these days, the damsel ends up saving the hero, really.
Unless it's Twilight.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, that's right.
And this is what brings
us. Yeah, but we haven't seen 4.2 yet. We don't know. I don't know.
Well, all I hope, and spoilers, people, because, I'm assuming that anybody who has seen this movie probably knows something about the book, but hopefully now in her current condition she might be able to kick some ass.
With the red
Let's
eyes,
hope.
Yes.
But you know what? It is Bella.
It is Bella, yes.
And I don't think Bella has a spinal cord, so...
We'll come back to that soon, but...
We will come back to that. Now, I just want to put out a little public service announcement, as we did for the last couple of shows. We have mentioned this over the last couple of weeks. We aren't doing live shows at the moment. They're on hiatus because of work commitments, and it's very hard for us to try and line up a dedicated spot for it. Hopefully, that will settle down in the new year, and we'll be going back to being live again. So we are just an audio podcast at the moment. So you can find that audio podcast at geekactually.com, or you can search for it on iTunes if you found it on geekactually.com and wanted to have subscribe. iTunes is the place to go. All right, let's start this show off, guys. What have we been watching this week? Josh, I believe you've got the biggest pile of films in your hand, so why don't you give us a start?
Dude, man, I have been smashing through as many films as I can. I got round, finally, to watching the third Boogeyman film.
Okay, how did that fare up to the second one?
Wow, look, it's better than two, but that's not really much of a stretch. It's interesting because neither of them are particularly good, and shit happens in this film that just doesn't make sense. And stereotypes are at their peak in this film. Like, you've got a black guy who smokes weed. Like, it's just at this stage in the world's state, you just try and avoid sticking to really bad cliches, otherwise people start getting angry at you. But they just decided, why bother? Let's just chuck in all these characters, like, the British guy that plays guitar and acts like a douchebag. Like, they've got every stereotype nailed down in the worst possible ways. I also saw both Prom Nights.
The originals or remakes?
What? There's more than one Prom Night?
I believe there was a remake of Prom Night at some point. This is the
what I mean. The original and the remake.
You watched the original and the remake. Oh, okay. Because the original Prom Night actually has like four sequels.
Oh, does it? Well, there you go. No, just the original. I haven't got through the other ones yet.
Don't.
Yeah, no. Dude, no, look, I have to say Prom Night was an interesting film because I watched the sequel first, and then I watched the other one, only because I got them from iTunes. And unfortunately, one downloaded quicker than the other. So we watched the 2009 one, which is awful, by the way. This film is PG. But PG in the worst possible ways. And it's funny because the original Prom Night isn't that violent either. But Prom Night, the new one, just totally screws up the concept of PG, as in they make it very obvious that there is not allowed to be blood or anything like that. Like, they cut the scenes together so that you basically are trying to see the violence that's happening. And I'm not trying to be sick about that. I'm just saying that you're actually wondering what's going on. You actually can't see what's happening.
What is it like, looking between your fingers, or they've put fingers over the screen, or how does that work?
They've just done shots where, like, the person jumps at someone with a knife, but then you don't actually see where it lands, and then they start moving. The camera goes away and looks from a distance, and you see stab movements, but you can't tell where they're being stabbed. So
that's the la-la-la-not-looking maneuver, is that correct?
Exactly, and it comes. It actually gets really frustrating because there are times where you're like, it's not so much about wanting to see the gore, it's about going, well, is this person surviving or are they just dead?
Right.
Like, you have no idea whether there's a struggle happening or whether they've just, taken them out and killed them. It's frustrating to watch. Idris Elba is in it and completely wasted. They've got him with an American accent in the worst possible ways. He doesn't seem to understand where he's from. He might be from Brooklyn, but he also sounds like he's probably from the South, but then also sounds like he might have a New Yorker accent, and they've pretty much just slammed them all together. and all of the cast are horrible, disgusting human beings you just don't want to relate to.
Oh, dear.
But other than that, it was great.
Fantastic. Then watched the original and was surprised. It's like, it's not a great film, but there's some really interesting moments. Like the way that the film wraps up surprised me. It was more adult as a concept than I was used to at horrors of the 80s kind of time.
Well, I remember seeing Prom Night. I didn't see it in its first release, but I actually saw Prom Night on VHS a few years later. And I actually quite enjoyed it because it was not just a stock standard slasher film. It actually had a little bit more to it, and I quite liked it.
Yeah, no, it was interesting because it's like at times during the middle, I was like, what is this, a disco revival ad or something? Like, it's like half the film is just people disco dancing. But the other half of the film actually has some decent horror moments and proves and outsells the remake on the fact that it still has very little to no blood, but yet maintains a really decent level of suspense to it.
Mm.
You may not be able to see what's going on, but they use the camera system very well to kind of play with what you can imagine is happening.
I also remember it having an interesting twist.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's what I mean by the ending.
I got to say, it's. I did enjoy it when I saw it, but I haven't seen the film. Let's be honest, I haven't seen the film in probably 20 years. So it's been a while.
But yeah, no, so that was
skip the remake, but the original is still worth going back and having a look at.
Original is definitely one that I would put in the horror canon of that era.
Fantastic. What else you got?
I'm actually going to pass to someone else. I'll come back because I've just totally blanked out.
All right. Are you ready to take the lead?
Well, as I said, I don't have the time and the skills, but the only thing that I've really been watching is, as I said, start introducing my kids to some films now that they're getting old enough, and one of them was watching Underworld, the original Underworld, with me, which was quite good actually. You know that
at his age, he'd appreciate Beckinsale and the skin tights.
I mean, I did make them suffer having to watch through the other Twilight movies with me. So I thought it was time to, you know, a bit of yin and yang happening, you know, that sort of thing. The other thing, of course, I've been a bit TV bound, and I'm still watching Supernatural, even though it's
Josh is a fan.
Yes, I love Supernatural, and I feel that
they've
lost the plot a bit. However, I don't care. I'm just happy to look at them. And I have to talk about that last episode where Sam got married, and the beautiful part in the beginning where Dean channels Daffy Duck. Do you know the part
in the chapel?
Up to the current season.
Yes, in the chapel, he's there querying what's happened, and he does the perfect Daffy Duck maneuver of perfect stillness, slight little face scrunched, looks at the camera, almost breaks the fourth wall, and not quite, and then flaps. What the hell do you think you're doing? It's just it is perfect Daffy Duck. It is art.
Oh, and fantastic. That's what I love about that show.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. I mean, yes, gorgeous boys, silly show, wouldn't miss it for the world.
My wonderful girlfriend, I think, put it the best when she said, it's like the boys next door. It's like if the boys next door that lived next door to you were both very attractive and also went and fought horror for, you know, their entire lives. It's like they're just, you know, you just want to catch up and find out what's going on in the world of Sam and Dean. It's a little bit like I have to say, it's almost more of a drama than it is a horror season, but I just love it.
Who cares? I just want to look at him. I miss Castiel, but that's okay. It's fine.
All right.
Absolutely everything is good.
All right. Well, speaking about horror television, Josh, I've been catching up on season 2, Walking Dead.
Oh. Why, Dave? Why?
Because at the end of season 1, we all said we would at least give it a shot because we were unhappy with the end of it.
I didn't need to. Everyone I spoke to said it was trash, so I avoided it. And these were people that loved it.
Okay, here we go. This is the most interesting part of the whole thing, okay? And this is my observation of Walking Dead in season 2, which is they are moving at a snail's pace.
Of course they are. It's an easy way to string out episodes.
Of the glacier.
Well, and the thing that gets me, though, is we've got 80, what is it? We're up to, what, 90 issues of source material or something like that of Walking Dead. And if you actually positioned yourself as to where we are in the series at the moment. We're now in second season. I think we're only reaching about issue 8.
Nice.
Right? So they are going at this glacial pace. Rather than saying, and this is the way I would have done it, which is to say key story arcs, make each season about one of those key story arcs, right? So season 1 would have been about Atlanta and about them, you know, him finding his family, blah, 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 and you would have had them moving on. Season 2, we would have probably got, this is spoilers for those who haven't read the comics, you'd probably get to the prison and have the prison sequence. Season 3, you'd probably be in the town with the governor, you know, and so forth. And you could actually find these key story arcs to do. That's not what they've chosen to do. Now, if you've read the comic book, you'll know at one point they end up on a freeway and they lose Sophia, right? The little girl. And in trying to find Sophia, they find a farmhouse, which is where they get some medical attention, and there's a little bit of a subplot there. Then they move on and they find the prison, right?
Yeah.
Well, we're now 4 episodes into season 2. Sophia went missing in the first episode. We're still looking for Sophia.
Wow.
And the farmhouse, we still haven't left the farmhouse. Now, the season's only going to be, what, 10 episodes or something like that. And you go, come on, guys, pick up the pace. What is wrong with you? And all I can think is they're trying to milk this thing for everything that it's worth, and it is destroying the series. Because I actually like a few more zombies in my zombie apocalypse movie, you know? And we actually have whole episodes go by where, like, we might see one. Now, I know they had their budget cut, which is probably another big factor.
What? A zombie's expensive.
Well, makeup and special effects, I guess. But you got to look at it this way and go, here's a series. And this is a personal gripe, and this is not about the series. This is about AMC, all right? Here you have a series where the pilot episode for Walking Dead was probably one of the highest rating shows on basic cable television ever, right? Massive following. The actual first season, massive ratings. It actually got picked up for a second season on its second episode. It was so popular. So what is AMC's answer to this? Slash the budget and cut the show and kill and fire the showrunner.
Yeah.
This doesn't make sense. This is the opposite reaction you have to a hit TV series. A hit TV series, you go, that's making us money.
You know who they want to be?
Who?
They want to be the new Fox.
They're feeling like it at the moment. Let me tell you. So, yeah, I am teetering on the verge of saying I'm done with this.
Yeah. I figured out one more, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched Quarantine 2.
The sequel to the American remake.
Yes. Okay. Now, I was happy to watch this because you all know that I'm still yet to see Quarantine 1 because I just don't care. I don't need to see a film I've already... Well, I don't need to see a film I've already seen.
Just to explain that to Robin, Quarantine is a remake of a... it's Italian, isn't it?
Spanish
film called Wreck. And Josh is a massive fan of Wreck. And so when the American remake came out, it's like, why do I need to see the American remake? I've already seen this movie.
It doesn't make sense. Even if you divert even mildly, I just haven't found the reason. Like, there are so many other films I could watch out there, and Wreck is such a perfect film, you don't need to see an American version.
Right.
Like... It stands on its own.
There is a morbid curiosity sometimes that sometimes if you do watch a foreign film that is so lovely, and then you think the Americans made a remake, why? And then you go slag, slag, slag for a while, and then you think, I wonder what they did. And then you have this like morbid curiosity, you know, like a car wreck, and you look and you think, why am I looking at this? Oh my God, the horror. And you think, I've just... sullied the memory, but, you know, they buggered it.
Yeah, well, look, I don't have to, like, I mean, I will watch it eventually. And the thing is, I know it's not going to be bad. You see, if it's bad, I can use it as a rage thing and point out why Wreck is so much better. But everyone I talk to says, yeah, Wreck's better and it's all right. It's not bad. And I'm like, sweet. So it's an above average film that isn't as good as a fantastic film. So I just haven't found the need. I really do want to watch it eventually.
Okay,
but it'll be just one of those, I'll watch it. But here's the thing. I had no qualms over watching this one because, A, it doesn't really follow on in any way from the original. And, 2, it doesn't follow the storyline of Wreck 2.
Right.
So it's
a standalone film.
Exactly. It's also awful.
And a marge.
It's awful.
So that's not really helping its canon because Wreck 2 is actually pretty good. Like, I have a few small gripes with it, but they're just that it didn't go the direction I saw it going. Like,
right.
I just didn't realize that's where they were hitting with it, but it was still a really good film. Whereas Quarantine 2 is on a very low budget, and it's all shot on a plane and then in an aircraft terminal. And basically, it's the same sort of concept, virus, bites, people start dying, you know, cast gets picked off, and then there's an ending. It's just really poorly shot. It's really average. Funnily enough, the storyline was probably the best bit of it, but that's not giving it much credit. It's just, it was okay. Like, the guy that told me to watch it gave a huge disclaimer, and I was like, is it good? And he went, no, no, but watch it anyway. And I now understand what he meant. Like, it makes sense to me after watching it. I'm like, right. So I see now like what you were trying to say. It's like it's better than some of the terrible films I've seen, like Boogeyman 2 and 3, but it's still really bad.
So it's better than a poke in the eye with a blunt stick, but really there's better ways to pass your time.
It's better than watching Twilight.
But I'm saying it's also like a reference point. Sometimes you see something or you do something and it becomes something that you have to use as a weapon. Perhaps
yeah.
for something
yeah.
else.
it becomes another one of those films I can bring up when I'm having conversations about horror. And I mean that. Like people can get angry at me over flicking at Twilight, but realistically, at least this film evokes some emotion, like terror and fear and stuff like that. It does that in certain scenes.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that because I'm coming back to that in the Twilight review. So yeah. I'm so glad you said that.
I'm done.
All right, that's done. You're done?
I'm done.
Let's move on to a feature review. What do you reckon? Let's like a Band-Aid. Let's just rip this thing off. All right. So we've got this week the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1, directed by Bill Condon and written by Melissa Rosenberg. It's based on a novel by Stephanie Meyer. How do you say her name? Meyer.
Go away, Stephanie. That's how you say it.
And she can't even, she even spells her name weird. Have you noticed this? She spells
Meyer.
With an E. The Stephanie. She spells it with an E. Stephanie. Anyway.
I never looked that closely.
Yeah, see,
oh my God.
Stephanie with an E.
Anyway. ADD.
Oh. It stars Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner, Peter Facinelli? Fascinelli. Jackson Rathbone, Ashley Green, blah, 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 blah. Who cares? These are all people we don't really care about. Anyway. And they've been starring in all the other Twilight films anyway. So if you've seen the other ones, you've seen
them. Hey, man, don't be dissing the dad, okay? That guy is a good actor, and he's still being a good actor in this.
I absolutely agree with you, and I'm going to come back to him. I'm going to come back to Billy Burke a little bit later on because I think he is the most wasted actor in this entire series of films.
Not to me, he isn't. Mm.
No, I'm saying he's wasted and he doesn't have enough to do. I love him.
Anyway, we'll come back to it.
Team,
come on.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. In the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1, Bella and Edward, plus those they love, must deal with a chain of consequences brought on by a marriage, honeymoon, and the tumultuous birth of a child, which brings an unforeseen and shocking development for Jacob Black. And that comes straight from Summit Entertainment. So if you think there was any spoilers in there, I didn't write it. All right. So that's their official synopsis. Let's have a look at the trailer, and then we'll come back and discuss this. Here we go.
You ready?
Yes. Just don't let me fall down.
Never.
I, Edward Cullen, take you, Bella Swan.
For better or for worse.
To love.
To cherish. As long as we both shall live.
This is how I'll remember you.
Pink cheeks.
Heartbeat. I think I'd be used to telling you goodbye by now.
Last night was the best night of my existence.
Inside out.
Your heart will give out before you can deliver.
You did this.
I can't see Bella's future anymore.
We don't know what they've bred. We have to protect the tribe before it's too late.
You're the enemy now. Sam won't hesitate. You will be slaughtered.
I'm starving you by the hour.
I'm the one who'll lose you.
You have to accept what is.
You've given me no choice!
Get ready. They're coming for Bella.
They're not gonna touch her.
If you kill her, you kill me.
How horribly dramatic that whole trailer is. Josh, I need you to justify your opinions on this to me.
All right. Well, look, man, to start with, when you're working on a scale which has started so low, it's very easy for films to gain any semblance of recognition as they slide up the chain. Now, if everybody actually remembers back to 3, I didn't think 3 was that bad in film either. I don't like it in a lot of ways because, again, there's still all of these things inside the film that bother me. So there is the way that she acts, there is the way that all the male characters around her are played out. Now, these are worst in the first two films because there's this weird display of kind of almost abuse from everybody around her, and she just plays the useless bimbo.
Right.
Now, as we go through the films, this hasn't changed, but the stakes around her keep raising.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this, the films at least get more interesting. So when 3 came around, you had this war breakout. And that section I actually thought was really decent. I thought the CG in it was all right. It's not amazing, but it was all right.
I did like the glass effect. I didn't quite understand how they justified it, but I
thought
the
it was fine.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. You see, I don't mind stuff like that. They didn't do anything messy. It was just that just come in, sweep up after.
It was a way of getting a PG-13 rating, is what it was.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? She's made her canon, and for me to just destroy her over a canon, especially as a horror fan, I will only attack things that I think really need to be destroyed. I know of mythical creatures that do smash into stuff when killed.
Personally, yeah.
No. Very funny. Sorry. Anyway, so let's stay on topic. The point is that as I went through this film, the first thing I started to notice was I was like, this is the most competent film, in my opinion, because it removes them almost entirely from the equation. Yes, they are still the main thing, but both of them actually have less dialogue than ever because they're not just talking constantly. It's mainly shot work because a lot of the time you've got things like the wedding where there's very little conversation going on, and then a lot of what happens from that point on is very short, very to the point dialogue as the story plays out, and especially because they're trying to fit this huge thing into two films.
Yeah.
And so things are moving quite quickly, which means that there's less shitty dialogue, there's less crappy acting because everything around them is starting to move forward. And the thing is, I didn't think the wedding was that bad. I'm not attached to them as characters, but as a shot of a wedding, I mean, it's as good as any home video wedding sequences. And essentially, that's all it is. It's just a wedding. So I was like, cool, you can have that scene. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
And I would understand how fans would get into that because they like these characters. So I'm like, they've done a good job at what they set out to do. So I won't hate them for that.
Right.
Now we get to the next scene, and there's a little bit of lovey-dovey crap between the two of them. And to be honest, that was probably my worst scene, was the honeymoon. Now she gets impregnated and shit starts happening again. And all of a sudden she's dying, which makes me incredibly happy.
No, but it's not just dying. Dying painfully.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm saying that, no, but that brings tragedy into the element. And all of a sudden we have emotion in this film, like real emotion. And I'm like, fine, I'm on board. Let's keep going. What have you got to show me? And then all of a sudden this epic thing breaks out where she gets home and everybody's like, nah, that's got to die. And I can understand the reasons behind that. There's this thing that is an abomination as far as everyone's concerned. Tensions raise. Problems become very apparent. People choose sides, and it almost comes into a horror movie in a lot of ways. And I didn't hate that. I actually went, all right, fair enough. These all make sense. And I'm going to let go of my attachment to these characters and just go, I'm playing this film out as if it's a standalone film. And when I got to the end of it, I'm like, nothing in that film went to the point where I was like, oh my God, I hate this. I was just like, yeah, okay, that was a film. And that's the first time I've walked out without feeling incredibly drained at the end of the experience. Like, the first three drained me. I was like, I don't care about these characters. The acting is terrible. The dialogue is an abomination. At least in this film, I felt like I was watching a film. I was still watching a film I didn't particularly want to watch, but it was competent enough to the point where when I walked out, I went, fine, you can have that one. Right. That wasn't that bad.
Yeah, fair enough.
And there's my thoughts.
Fair enough. Robin, let's hear it. Now, we gotta wait before Robin goes. Before I just realized I should probably just interject right here that some spoilers may seep out here. We're not intentionally trying to do spoilers, but I've read Robin's article, so I know what's coming in some of this. So just be aware that if you are really, really sensitive to spoilers and you don't want spoilers of any kind whatsoever, you might want to see the film before you listen to this. Okay, but. There's just a little bit of a warning for you. Okay, so Robin, go for it.
Well, I mean, I was actually looking at that trailer we did beforehand, and I thought, there is no movie. That is the movie. There's nothing. Anyway, look, because I'm the next rung down, I don't hate this film either. I actually think it is one of the most stunning films from a little girly girl perspective. Mm. My personal opinion is that this film is not, you know, a Twilight film. It is, you know, a girl saying to a boy, will you come with me to see Twilight? And this is one of those questions. If he says yes, he's in. If he says no, that's it. But then on the other side, if she likes Twilight, he's going to have a good, long, hard look at her. Because
and make the decision of whether or not he wants to go there. Bingo. I completely agree.
Bingo. So it's a very, very complex little thing. So, you know, sometimes a cigar or a Twilight film is not necessarily a cigar or a Twilight film. So there you go. Look, I think it's a stunning looking movie. I actually have waxed lyrical about this in my article, but I think it's going to actually change the whole playing field for weddings for years to come.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Look, it was just so beautiful. And
they got that scene down.
Absolutely. Really, I think it was designed, you know, by you know, so the Twilight stylists and Lothlorien had a big hand in that, you know, and there were the jaunty boys coming in with their you know, shifting the furniture that looked like something out of, you know, the Hobbits there. You know, it was just, everyone was so terribly happy. And look, it looked beautiful. It really, really did look beautiful. And I did have a lovely time taking pot shots about the fact that, you know, he comes in prior to the wedding, which is supposed to be bad luck anyway, and she's there getting ready to go, and he has a little confess the night before the wedding that he had done his little murder spree and all of that, but it was, you know, it was okay, that's right, because, you know, they were really bad people and you know, it was, you know, because it was only the bad ones that he ate. And it was quite a cute little sequence prior to that where you were thinking he was going to go after the girl, but in fact he was taking care of her, was predating the predator. Mm,
yeah, I love it. It's so funny.
Oh, yes. So,
And I love the way that she's justifying that as well straight afterwards, which I'm like, that's kind of like, yeah, you're a violent person, but it's all right. Don't worry.
Okay. No, they were bad people. They were bad people. I actually have a mathematical equation to cover that. Read the article. And I also
it's very complicated.
I also talked about the fact that, you know, there he is, because they're bad people, it's okay to take them out, you know, so it sort of, you know, really puts the cull into Cullen, doesn't it, really? Mm. So, you know, that was okay. And I thought, oh, she never changes, does she? She never changes. And, you know, I'm with you. I love Billy Burke. I am Team Charlie. I just think he is brilliant.
His speech at the wedding was the best thing in this entire film. When he goes, I'm a man of few words or whatever. He goes, but I can track a man across the country and I have a lot of guns.
I know. I thought he was gorgeous. And the thing is, I mean, I read the first couple of books and how he was written.
You actually got through a couple of them?
I did. I tried really hard. I tried. I really did. I was valiant and I gave up. And that was before I was knew I was
Myers
doing all of this.
Writes like she's still
my
in high school.
Brain.
It's terrible.
Oh God, she talks like that too. But you know the way Charlie was written was just woeful. He was like this two dimensional character, and yet somehow Billy Burke has teased this wonderful character out of nothing.
He only gets like five lines in each film.
I know.
But
absolutely.
Each one of those, Josh, you and I keep talking about this, is that one moment in the very first film, which is our favorite moment, where he's introduced to Edward and he cocks his shotgun.
Yeah.
And you just go, that is just that's genius. You know, yeah. You didn't even have to say anything, you know?
Yeah. Oh, look, it is awful on so many levels, but then, as I said, it's been styled so beautifully. And I think you can't get
away
from that.
That's what I mean.
That.
It's become more than itself. It's like everyone involved now knows that they just have to do the best with what they've got.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it just seems to be so much better than any of the other films, because at least with this one, it's all about the spectacle. They're like, hey, look at all this amazing stuff happening. Try not to focus on a plot because it's not that good.
And the money rolls in.
Yeah.
That's
oh,
thing.
Yes.
That's
you can
the
hear
thing.
The, you can hear the cash register just ringing as you're watching it.
The music's great again. You know, they've just got the formula down pat. And, I mean, to me, you know, the others didn't have a great deal to do in this film. And that was a bit of a pity because I don't mind some of the other characters.
We're actually distilling. Have you noticed that each film we're distilling the cast down further and further and further? It's like a bowl of boiling water. Mm. Over time, it's just reducing because it's just steaming off. So by the time we've got to this film, we're literally down to like four characters. Mm. You know, it's like we're just distilling it down to its absolute core now.
Yeah. Well, these people only have a few lines to do or a few things to do. I mean, we've established all that we're going to give them. You know, character-wise, in the previous film. So now you just have to be like you couldn't. It's a shame because I said to Celine, it's like this film is relatively competent. But if anybody says, well, should I watch them? I'd be like, oh, hell no. No, no, don't watch them.
Oh, the first three are- I don't know. I mean, look, I went with a neighbour who was very kind to come with me. And she was telling me, and she liked it. She thought it was good. And a couple of days later, she told me that at the gym, she was talking to a couple of her lesbian friends. And now she's straight. And they love it. So, like, I mean, you just can't figure out which way this is going to jump.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's so you can't say because, oh, it's got all these things wrong with it, you know, the elements, the parts of it actually are is actually some of greater than some of its parts, you know, and I don't know, as I said before, maybe Stephanie has in fact done a deal that there's some sort of weird alchemy going on here that we as people with some sort of sense or taste.
Well, she definitely touched on a nerve that was ready to be touched because it's the phenomenon that the books became is just, it shouldn't have happened.
No.
The books aren't good. They're badly written pulp junk.
Yes.
And yet for some reason it just touched the right nerve.
Yes.
That
well, because
the
every
young girl just
single...
went, oh my God, it's beautiful. You
dude,
know?
Because now it seems like now this generation's teen girl seems to be all right with the concept that men fight over her and she basically falls into a state of depression and causes all these issues. Mm. And that's apparently how people want to be now. Which is disturbing.
And this is actually one of my issues with the film. So when it comes to me, I'm going to talk about that.
Oh, look, it's terrible. I mean, as I said, you know, what disturbed me as well was the special effects where Bella's there being pregnant and dwindling.
Anorexia.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I thought, you know, I really hope this is a stunt body, you know, one of those Benjamin Button or Captain American thing, because she looked dreadful.
Oh, well, no, because we saw her body earlier on when she's in the bikini. So
yeah,
sure,
I know, but the thing is, you know, how much discernment does the 12-year-old that's looking at this thing think, well, maybe I could look like that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And
dude, I, honestly, man, you would have to be a pretty sick person to want to look like that. Like, they did a good job.
Welcome to anorexia.
That's right. Absolutely. This is it. They're not playing, you know, for whatever drives them to that point. And if they think that this whole idea of this film is an idea of romance, then, you know, this is how men are supposed to, as you say, fight over you and you're supposed to flop around being tragic. You know, there are some very, very skewed mores here. And, I mean, the thing is, yeah, sure, we can look at it from this perspective, but they don't have the discernment. The target audience does not have that level of discernment. Mm. And that is what I find disturbing about the whole thing. Yeah, we can look at it and say, yes, this is a heap of garbage, but what do you do?
Exactly my point, though, Robin, which is when I look at this film and this entire series of films, we've talked about this in previous shows, Josh, where we say this series of films has set back feminism 30 years.
Oh, you know? Great. Absolutely.
There's no doubt about it. And each film has a particular different thing that it's actually building on. This one is spousal abuse. This one, you actually have them have sex. The next morning, she's covered in bruises. He goes, oh, I'm sorry, dear. And she looks down coyly and goes, it's okay. It's like, Oh, so it's okay to beat up your woman until she's bruised,
but the other issue, but the other issue is that what she wants, you know, as I said before, you know, maybe she likes a bit of rough trade. You know, the thing is, it's all about, you know, control, male control, like, and he pulls the pin on sex, so she can't have sex at all. So it's so weird. It's this whole Madonna whore thing that's just weird. And then don't start me on the imprinting.
Oh, now the imprint.
Don't start me. Wow. Do not start me.
I love how they brushed over that so quickly.
Yeah, I would like to read something that I have here, which is actually, funnily enough, from a Miss Robin Smith. because I actually want to ask you something.
Yes?
At the very beginning of your article, whoops, where is it? At the very beginning of your article, you actually have a little definition here, and you actually say, imprinting is when one of the Quileute tribe of Lapush werewolves finds their second half.
Yes.
The wolf commits to the person they imprint to and does anything to make that person happy. If they're the same age, they become lovers. If the person they imprinted on is younger, they become the equivalent of a big brother. You've put a question mark there. To them, until the girl gets older, and you say the wolf doesn't age.
Apparently, yes, okay. According to my source, yes.
Until then, and they can start a romantic relationship. Wolfpack rules also state that no wolf may cause harm to another wolf's imprint, blah, blah, blah. My question is, where the hell did you get this information? Because this is nowhere in the film.
No.
They don't explain this in the film at all.
Look, I researched.
I actually got that entire sense from the film.
Yeah.
Not the part
just,
where they
just
don't.
Putting
not,
that out there.
Not the part
no,
where
I'm
they
sorry,
don't age.
I actually did. I got all of that from the
no,
film.
No, well, I did look that up because I wanted to qualify because I had like half memories of things, of the bits that I'd read and stuff. As I said, I spend a lot of time on these, David, let me tell you. More than someone should. And I wanted to make sure
your
my facts
were. Your dedication is amazing.
It is. You have no idea. And I consider this a public service. What can I say?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that
someone's got to do it.
That's right.
Absolutely. There's a lot of people out there that are confused about this.
I've been taking a bullet for a long time for this thing. Multiple rounds. Yeah, so this is the whole canon that's gone through. And I have researched it and he said, yeah, that's right, you know. And, of course, plus it fed me my best line in that thing.
Yeah.
But you know that this is the whole more is that they have this weird, you know, you're a brother until you become a sexual partner, you know. I don't
can
know
I,
which
can
is
I
worse.
Just say mm-hmm. I have one word for all of this.
Ew. Ew is right. Yeah, I mean, you know, that and yet still have a PG rating. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sorry, it's just so inconsistent and it's ick on so many levels. You've got, as I said, the spousal abuse. You've got the isolating thing. I hate the whole isolating thing. Mm. That's the one that I hate the most.
That was the bit that made me feel really queasy is the whole, especially not only the sexual thing, it's also when she gets pregnant, his attitude towards it. Though kind of, look, I mean, in a kind of dramatic kind of situation, I guess I can kind of understand how it would be very weird for someone to have to deal with something like that, but at the same time, it doesn't make it right, especially considering the fact that she's dying, and he basically goes, well, fuck you.
I know. As I said in my thing, that, you know, the men in this particular film have more hissy fits and tantrums per capita, you know. The women are being reasonably
level-headed.
Well,
all the women are submissive, and that's the problem.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true.
You know, they all sit there. I mean, this is going to sound incredibly controversial, but what's next, burkas? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're all isolated. They're all kept down. It's the men who are in charge. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I have real issues with the messages that these films, especially with the target audience.
That's right. Absolutely.
I have real issues with the messages.
I know. It just.
Let's talk about this film specifically, though. I think this film is like a Versace handbag.
Yes,
all right?
Yes.
It is gorgeous to look at.
Yes.
And ultimately empty. Mm-hmm. Okay, it is. It for me personally, I had no emotional.
A Versace handbag, Dave. It's usually full of stuff. Just saying. But anyway, keep going.
I'm talking about a nice new one that you picked up in a shop. It's empty. Right. You haven't put your stuff in it yet, all right? But it's basically empty. I didn't care about anyone in this film. Like all the previous films, I don't care. And when Bella is dying with this creature inside her stomach, all I can think is, baby, chew faster. Okay? I'm just thinking, because as soon as it's over, I can go home. You know? I don't care about Jacob and his little hissy. All I can say is, get over it. Mm. When the girl actually says, why don't you go imprint on someone else? It's like, go, girl. Mm, you know? Get over it. Move on. You know? It's like, I got, as I say,
that's
the only.
That's not what love is, Dave.
You know what? I love my wife. It's not that. It's not. Yes. It's not that movie.
Sort of like the anti-template. Like, I mean, as I said in my thing, you know, that they should actually study these films like, you know, The Truman Show or something, or some sort of cautionary tale. Sort of say, like, whatever this is not what's supposed to be. What, you know, all right, children, what's wrong with this picture? Mm. You know, that this is not how relationships really are. This is not healthy. This is strange and weird and aberrant behavior. You know, yeah. You can't.
Bill Condon, the guy who directed this one, because each one's had a different director all the way through. They haven't even been able to keep a consistent director, which is kind of weird. Catherine Hardwicke, who directed the first one, did the worst job, obviously. I mean, the first film is awful. It looks terrible. The acting is terrible. The script was... I mean, just everything about the first Twilight, I hate it, okay? I give the fact that each director since then has tried to bring something to it.
Yes.
All right?
It's so valuable. It's such a valuable commodity.
Absolutely. New Moon brought color because Catherine Hardwicke did everything in steel blue, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, New Moon brought color and it brought Italy, you know?
I liked
and,
Italy.
And Eclipse brought shattering vampires, which was kind of cute.
Yeah.
And this film brings beautiful photography. And Bill Condon is the man who directed Showgirls and Gods and Monsters. Mm-hmm. The man knows how to make a film, mm-hmm. all right? Mm-hmm. And he's stuck with possibly one of the worst scripts of the year to try and make something out of. And he's done his damnedest to try and make the film interesting. And I will say one thing, the film has a better pace than any of the previous ones. It actually tries, it tries to keep moving, you know?
I mean, I felt that the pregnancy was proceeding in real time.
Well, see, I didn't. I thought it dragged a little bit as the baby was starting to chew its way through. And I was thinking, we really do just need to pick up the baby. The first half of this film goes by so fast that I've never seen an abbreviated wedding. You'd think they want to milk this for everything it's worth. And yet it's like, we open the film, she's trying shoes on, then they're bringing out the chairs, then we're going on the aisles, and she has a dream, then we do this. It's like, and then we're married. It's like, and we're off on a honeymoon. Boom, we're on a boat. And it's like, you think, wow.
It's like a travelogue, really.
It was like a travelogue. And it's like they're in their cabin. We should get out of here. We should walk around. We should have a look. It's like, and you sit there and go, it's
play
like,
chess.
And then it's like, and then we get to the honeymoon and it's like, let's have sex. Oh, I don't think so. I'm not sure. And I have another problem with this as well. She goes, I need to get ready, and then proceeds to go shave her legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's back to the taking no personal responsibility for anything. She doesn't even organise her own bloody trousseau, for God's sake.
She doesn't know what's in her suitcase.
I know.
Pulling out, she goes, oh, Alice. It's like, what, you didn't help Alice pack your bag, you know?
She does nothing.
Nothing. I hate Bella. Can I tell you, I hate her. And if you hate the principal lead of a film, it's very hard to enjoy the film because I hate her with a passion. And I sit there, and it's not even Kristen Stewart. It's the character that has been written.
There's been no growth redeeming, to that character. No redeeming features whatsoever.
And she hasn't grown over four films. She's still the mopey little thing.
Even when she was pregnant. And it's supposed to be getting bigger. She could still get littler. Yes. contracting.
I think Taylor Lautner is one of the worst actors at the moment. I mean,
better for the last one.
Go from this to Abduction.
Wasn't he awful?
He's awful. He just whines his way through the movie. Look, Robert Pattinson, I've seen him in other stuff. He can act. I don't know why they just drag him down into this role. Because he hates doing it, apparently.
Does he?
I read an article about a year ago that just said, yeah, we've just wrapped on Breaking Dawn, and he was so happy that they were finally finished doing these films, you know? Because he wants to go and do other things. Good for him.
Yeah.
Break out of it and go do something else. You need to. Because
I've actually given him a pass. Like, I gave him a pass as of last year when some of his other films started to show up and things started to be all right, and I started to realize that he was better than it and just went, all right, you're okay, man.
Yeah, he is. Okay.
Did you see that film that he did with Catherine Tate?
No, not yet.
It was called The Bad Mother's Handbook. I accidentally stumbled on it one day, and he was good.
Mm.
Well, these little obscure little British numbers with Catherine Tate as the...
I'd also really like him to go back to using his natural accent.
Yeah, well, that's right. He was really good. And my God, is he a ranger or what? I had no idea he was such a redhead.
So the ultimate feeling I came away from this film was I was just waiting for the credits to roll. Because I really didn't care.
It's because your bladder was about to explode.
No, I actually didn't even find it that long. I mean, I've sat through the Harry Potter films. They're a lot longer than these things. Well, you know what I mean?
See, you're a mighty sterling man.
But I just sat there. Bladder. I just sat there going, I don't... And I think that the biggest issue for me is it all comes down to you must form an emotional connection with the people in the film because they're reflecting the audience. If you don't connect with your principal lead or whoever it is that you're following, you don't want to take the journey of the film. And I don't like any of the principal leads. I don't connect with them emotionally.
You like Charlie. Come on.
I'm like Charlie. I feel like I want to be at the beginning of the film and then leave. I want to be the dad. I want to get out my shotgun and go kill them all. No. I'm just over. I'm really, really over the series because it started from a flawed position.
That's right.
It started from such a flawed position.
Well, this is what I come back to when I was saying the fact that if anybody asked me, should I watch the films, I would say no, because the first three are so bad, I would never want someone to sit through those to get to a film that's just okay.
But the problem is that we also have to have, there's obligatory stuff that you need to know to enjoy this film. So
you can't mention make really,
that's
really
what
cruel
I mean.
Jokes.
You can't just tell somebody to sit down and watch that one. To watch an average film, you have to sit through the first three. And I would never make someone do that.
No, so to watch the average film, you have to sit through three bad films to get there. And it's like, no, it's just not fair to anybody. And if you're not a Twilight watcher, if you've never seen Twilight and you go, well, I'm kind of curious, this isn't, no, don't. Walk away.
Well, you still can't. Yeah.
Just walk
away. You have
away
to go and
point.
Watch all of them if you're going to watch them. And I would never tell anyone to do that.
It is a commitment.
Yeah.
And I still get back to my original contention that anybody that has anything to do with anybody under the age of about 16 really needs to know what it is that they're going on about. I actually think it's a very important reference material.
2 years ago, when we did New Moon, and we said, if we're going to do New Moon, we really should watch Twilight again. We should do the two together, back to back. If you remember this, Josh, right? So I sat down and I had to watch Twilight again. And Katie, my
did
lovely
you cry?
Wife. I cried in pain. Katie, my lovely wife, and my son watched it with me. And we sat there. And from Nicholas has just walked into the studio and he's standing behind me. And we sat there watching it. Nicholas is going, this is awful. So from the mouth of an 11-year-old at the time, he's going, oh my God, this is awful. You know?
But that's great. You brought him up to have some form of...
Oh, my son has taste, man.
I know, that's right. I mean, you know, and that's great. And maybe it's sort of like you seed him and he can go out into the world and sort of say, no, children, please don't watch that. It's very bad.
Yeah,
look
very
at
bad,
this
very
instead.
Bad.
This is much better.
So, look, okay, we come down to the crux of it. All right, Josh, you started us off. Would you recommend it to a friend?
As I've been saying the entire thing, you can't suggest this one unless you've watched the other three, and the problem is that the other three are too terrible, and the problem with that is that just because you're making this a better thing doesn't mean that it's any better for people to sit down and watch this. I mean, on a not only emotional level, but also on a good for our society level, so therefore, no, I will not recommend it.
Fantastic. Robin, would you recommend this to your friends? Oh, the groan of pain.
Look, I'm self-serving enough to say watch the movie because you can look at my review. But then some people have said, well, I can read your review and I don't have to watch the movie. So maybe it is public service. I don't know.
Look, I'm going to say
that. You are so self-promoting. It's great.
It's fantastic. I'm going to say that if you read Robin's thesis.
It is a bit, isn't it?
It's an 8-page thesis. If you read her thesis and you still want to see this movie, go for it.
I concur.
Because I don't think you're going to want to somehow. Anyway, I'm not going to recommend this to people. I don't recommend the Twilight films because I think that even if you're in the target demographic, I think they're bad for you.
Like too much sugar.
Yeah, like too much sugar. I think they send...
And
the,
crack.
I think they send the completely wrong message to people, and I think they are ultimately kind of dangerous.
Yes.
You know, and as pretty as they might be, you know, a chocolate bar is pretty, you know, and it tastes really good, but it's not good for you.
That's right.
You know, and so, I'm going to say Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1, no. But you know what? We'll be back here next year to do Twilight Saga. And Robin, you will be back next year to do Part 2, won't you?
Of course. Unless I'm dead or something.
Can I tap out? No.
If you wish. And you know, there's a Richard Rand fleeing for the hills. Richard is, you know, a hardened movie critic. He's seen so many movies this year and so forth, and yet he has not seen the Twilight films. He's avoided them. So good for him. So, all right, let's move on to a little bit of entertainment news, guys. You guys familiar with Booster Gold?
Yeah.
He's a comic book character from the DC universe. We actually talked about this in our comic book show, so we'll make this pretty quick. He made a brief appearance in the series Smallville at one point. He's basically from the future. He's a sports star who basically steals time travel technology, comes back to our present, and becomes a superhero with his future technology just to self-serve, basically, to make himself...
What, a bit like
me? I like him.
You like him. So the good news about all this is he's kind of a fun character. He's a bit egotistical and everything else. Looks like he's heading for TV. Looks like they're putting the ink to paper now, and they're going to make a Booster Gold TV series on the Sci-Fi Channel. So
I hope that when they're thinking about how he looks, I want somebody that looks like Duffman.
Duffman! Absolutely. We're just going to kick through the news pretty quick because we've also got a list to go, and I'm dying to hear you guys' lists. Rocky! Adrian! You know,
yes, Dave, we all know Rocky.
Okay, well, Sylvester Stallone is actually developing Rocky the Musical for Broadway.
I love it.
Oh my God!
I'm gonna go see it.
Yeah, Hollywood Reporter is reporting that that they are working on it right now, and they're not deterred by the fact that Spider-Man: Turn Off the Dark has been such a financial disaster. They're still going to go ahead and make Rocky the Musical. Oh dear God!
Well, it's been a cash cow for so long now. I suppose he's got to think of, you know, other ways to make it pay.
Look, yeah. I think you guys are missing the point. It doesn't matter how good the film is. They just want everybody from, you know, sort of Brooklyn and New Jersey to finally go out and see a musical. So that's essentially where they're heading with this.
Now, the part of this that actually amused me the most was that, you know, you would think Sylvester Stallone is teaming up with somebody to make Rocky the Musical. So you think he's teaming up with Stephen Sondheim, or he's teaming up with Menken, or, you know, somebody to make a musical.
Someone with a good pedigree.
Yeah, well, apparently he's teaming up with world champion boxing brothers Vladimir and Vitali Klitschko, because they obviously have such experience in musicals.
Right.
This is going to be amazing.
Oh, it's going to be a train wreck waiting to happen.
You're ready.
Now, from that really horrible news to really good news, Aaron Sorkin, if you remember last week, I think it was, Josh, we actually said that Sony was courting Aaron Sorkin to write the Steve Jobs biography, the film version of the Steve Jobs biography for a film version. Apparently, he is actually mulling it over. And he says that it's not out of the question. He hasn't confirmed, but it's not out of the question. So I'm all in for that, if that happens. And the last one we have, which I thought was really curious, was that the Jim Henson Company has decided to develop a brand new sitcom called The New Neighbors, which will combine puppets and live action.
Sounds to me like we're pretty much going to get a live-action version of Family Guy.
I hope so, dude. Except being Jim Henson Company, probably a little bit softer-toned.
That's
yeah, but I don't know. They seem to have that edgy thing going on nowadays.
Mm.
You know, like Muppets Tonight,
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah, that's true. So it will be new characters, apparently.
The Simpsons are gone. There's a void.
That's true. They're finishing, aren't they?
That's great. Right.
Forgot. All right, so The New Neighbors, look for it soon, hopefully. And I'm all in for that. I think that'll be a lot of fun. You know me. I love Muppets. All right. So we got our lists of five. Everybody got their lists of five ready?
I have indeed. Yes.
All right. This week we're doing five Damsel in Distress movies. And I said to my wife, my lovely wife, I said, how would you sum up Damsel in Distress? And she just said this simple sentence, and I thought it was perfect. She says, when will my hero come?
And that absolutely shot me in the foot.
And I thought, there you go. That sums it up right there. All right. Let's do this. Who wants to start? Oh, where's my list? Hold on. Oh, it's in my pocket. All right. Who wants to start us off on
Josh
this?
Josh Ken.
Josh, you're number five.
All right, cool. Now, as everybody knows, these aren't my favorite types of films. I'm not really a damsel kind of a person.
Granted.
I like my damsel to get up, like in my horror movies that I watch more than anything, get up and kick the shit out of whoever's chasing them. So
Buffy.
These aren't... Yeah, well, exactly. That kind of a thing. So essentially... I struggled a little bit with this list, and where I got to was I've done a whole bunch of films that have damsels in them, though they may not be the standardized kind of ones. So number one on my list is a recent one, which is Tangled, which I absolutely adored because it's kind of a play on the concept.
Loved it. It's just a retelling of Rumpelstiltskin, isn't it? It's beautiful, though. Not Rumpelstiltskin.
Rapunzel.
Rapunzel.
But at the same time, it's not in any way Rapunzel. Like, this film is hilarious. I mean, you've got...
It's beautiful. I loved it.
you've got a girl who's been living in a room, and people would just expect that would mean she wouldn't know anything. But of course, she would have read every book she could get her hands on, learned everything she possibly could. And she kicks serious ass. And I thought it was hilarious.
I love Tangled. I thought it was a lot of fun. Robin, you're number five.
So this is counting down from
the number five to number one.
To number one. Right. Okay. Well, I assumed that you blokes would be taking care of that one. All right. So I've gone with Howl's Moving Castle. is Sophie from the Studio Ghibli, who is a plain and boring girl, and sort of meets up with the mysterious Hal, who's the magician.
Mm-hmm.
And then she is cursed by a jealous witch to being an old woman. Now, I am, in fact, a young girl who has been hit by the same curse, really.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's true. It's true. Now, I really like this one because I guess, once again, you've got the distressed damsel. You've got the fact that she has been captured by this curse where she can't even speak of what has happened to her. And, you know, I guess in the final tradition too, she ends up not only being rescued by the fellow, but the magician Hal, but ends up rescuing him as well. So it's pretty good. I like it.
Would you believe I still haven't seen it?
Oh, it's a great film.
It is. It's really good.
I've been wanting
to
see it for ages. Haven't got to.
Very
it
good.
Yet.
Very good.
Still not my favorite Ghibli, but still.
No, I agree. But it's good. It's up there.
My number five is kind of out of left field, guys. I'm going to Big Trouble in Little China, because not only does Jack Burton have to save Gracie Law, but he also has to save Mei Ling, the two girls who are captured by David Lo Pan, and he has to go in there in his best John Wayne voice and go for the save.
Isn't one of them Kim Cattrall?
Kim Cattrall, yeah,
absolutely. And you look how well that went.
Josh, you're number four.
I just chucked in an obvious one, which was the Princess Bride film.
It's a higher on my list. Shall we? Yep. Shall we save
no,
that?
No, because mine all get kooky from here. So yeah, let's just save that one. We'll come back.
All right. So we'll save it. So your number four is The Princess Bride. We'll come back to that because it's higher on my list. Okay.
Me too.
Oh, it's higher on your list too. All right. Well, we'll save this until we get a little bit higher. We can all jump on this one. All right, Robin, your number four.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. With,
oh, I didn't think of that.
Clementine Krasinski. So I think what was interesting about her, aside from the fact she was such an arch, unlikable character, she was looking for her hero, who was also the dragon that put her there in the first place. So I thought that it's one of my favourite films, and I thought she actually fit the bill. There you go.
Great film. Didn't even think about it. Interesting. Yeah. Who are we up to?
That
Josh,
you're...
Oh, me. My number four. Mm-hmm. My number four is really out of left field. I'm going... This was actually my son's suggestion, I believe. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, because they got to save the medieval princesses from the evil Bill and
right,
Ted's.
Of course. Why didn't I think
from the
that?
Evil, from the evil robot usses.
Oh, mate.
On for me that I think that was a dude of a choice, man.
That
Josh
is brilliant.
Josh thinks it's a dude of a choice.
Fantastic. Great.
And all I'm going to say at that point is be excellent to each other. Oh, party on. Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's so much to teach people in that film. Really.
I think so. I agree. Absolutely.
All right, Josh, you're number three.
My number three is one that is not on either of your lists.
Okay.
How
do you know that?
But it's Commando. I'm sorry, but he has to go save his daughter.
He does. I forgot
and
about
dude,
it.
I was just thinking about it, and I'm like, no, yeah, actually that fits.
That
I'm totally putting
fits
it in there.
Perfectly. A little charm girl. What's her name?
All I can say is let off some steam, Bennett.
what's her name? She was one of the charm sisters from TV. Alyssa Milano.
Yes,
Alyssa
right.
Milano.
Yep,
there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Robin, you're number three.
It's Jenny.
Jenny.
Jenny from Forrest Gump. The damsel, forever
in
distress.
I'm not a smart man.
Forever in distress and forever lost because he was her hero and eventually she would recognise it by his love and constancy and giving her a safe place to be and ultimately die. I thought she was pretty well up there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, damsel in distress.
Once again,
exactly
a film I didn't
tired
think of, but it is an awesome choice.
I told you to work hard for you, though.
Wow.
I told you.
Josh, you're out of a job, man.
She works hard for the money, man. Dude, take her, man. It's fine. Be like that about it. I don't want to work on your show. That's it. I'm gone. Bye.
My number three is Errol Flynn's Robin Hood. I think The Adventures of Robin Hood, let's face it, he's saving a kingdom. He's robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. But the bottom line is he's trying to stop the wedding of Maid Marian and the evil sheriff.
Of course.
So, you know, come on. And look, you could pick any Robin Hood, but let's face it, Errol Flynn's Robin Hood.
Yes, absolutely.
Come on.
Aussie. Oi.
Josh, you're number two.
Oh, now you want my opinion.
Yeah, I do. Actually, I love you, Josh.
Yeah, he does. He told me.
Spider-Man 2.
Oh,
yes.
Nicholas actually also mentioned a Spider-Man film as well. So there you go. Mm.
Well, Spider-Man 2 is the real damsel in distress one where, you know, everything about his life and he has to make the right decisions for her and all that sort of stuff. And as much as it is wanky and self-serving in parts, it is the true damsel in distress story. So, yeah.
Because actually, funny, my son actually mentioned Spider-Man 1 because, of course, there's the bridge scene with Mary Jane being thrown off the bridge. And I was sitting there going, it's not quite, it's not the central premise of the film. No. But you're right, Spider-Man 2 is a lot more. You're right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Spider-Man 2 is all about the relationship between those two and the fact that he has to do what is right, and essentially that is to save her, but in a much more modern and a much less maleistic kind of a way, more in a kind of relationship kind of a way, like they need to fix and solidify what they have, and you know, it's a good story. I like
it. I'll say is go get him, Tiger.
It's romantic.
Yep. It's romantic.
It's got love.
Yeah.
All right, Robin, your number two? Are we up to twos?
Yeah,
two.
I've got The Princess Bride, but
you've got The Princess Bride.
Yeah, we'll
it's also my number two.
Right,
then do your thing and talk about it.
And it was your number four, so let's do it, Princess Bride.
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father.
Prepare to die.
How can you go past that? It's just
inconceivable.
Wish. And anything that gives you dread pirate Roberts, I love it.
It's such a good film. It's indeed a great film all around. And let's face it, Buttercup is just glorious.
Well, I realized that I had it twice.
I was about to say, Robin Wright actually makes two films on your list. Very
good. That was not a deliberate thing.
I think we have the Queen of the Damsels here with the same actress appearing twice now. Josh, tell us about Princess Bride. What makes you love it so much?
Dude, it's exactly what you guys are talking about. It's quippy, it's fun, it's so much smarter than it appears on first look.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you pick this up in a DVD store, you would probably look at it and be like, that looks like sappy crap.
Mm-hmm.
But it's everything that makes up the film. It's so much more than just the simple damsel situation. It's the dialogue, it's the humor, it's the great scenes, it's things like, guess what, I'm left-handed as well, and it's just... constantly makes you laugh, which means that it's the ultimate film for everyone.
Yep.
Like, there is no one I have met that can actually say they've hated this film.
I don't think I've ever met anybody who didn't like it.
No, it's just.
And
it's
I think
great.
If you did, you're a cold, horrible person. I don't want to know you anyway.
No, maybe.
Dude, I'm serious.
No, you're a Twilight fan. You're a Twilight fan. That's what you are.
You're a Twilight fan, absolutely.
If you hate The Princess Bride, you're a Twilight fan.
Exactly. If you can't like that kind of a story, then there is no love, wit, or charm in you, and I have no interest in you as a person.
And you deserve to die.
Easy.
No, that's it. Not you. No, you're lovely. No, I'm just saying, I was finishing your line.
Oh, right. Yes, sorry, I missed that. It's the Skype call.
I'm sorry. I'd never do anything to offend you.
Let's roll on.
I know you wouldn't.
I know.
Let's do a round of number ones. What do you reckon?
Okay, you start, Josh.
Josh, number one.
Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
To me, there's that essential thing inside the storyline, which for me is, like, we were thinking about damsels, and I love the situation between him and her. And it's like, throughout all the chaos that is going on, he is constantly trying to save her. And it's interesting because of the way that the film kind of ends up tying up towards all of that. But I don't know. There's something about Rachel in that film that I actually really like the dynamic between the two of them.
Mm.
But again, that's just my pick.
Fair enough. Robin, you're number one.
Marion Ravenwood from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
She was
my first action heroine that I thought, well, she was... you know, damsel in distress. And I realized when I was thinking about it, I thought...
So it's not Temple of Doom?
No, the first one, Raiders. No. Absolutely Raiders, because I thought about it, you know... Actually,
she's kind of gutsy too, though.
She was. But I mean, she was in trouble because, you know, Indy broke her heart when she was young. He comes back and breaks her bar after wanting something from her. So he keeps buggering up alive every time. Then she tries to get some sort of recompense, so she ends up being left for dead again. He half rescues her from Belloc. And then leaves her pregnant at the altar and produces mutt. That's not real good. And then...
Hey, wrong film though, dude.
I know, but I'm just saying...
I agree with her. You know, like, that is something you have to bring up.
It is. I mean, ultimately, you know, he gets her into these situations and then has to, you know, rescue her to close the loop. sort of thing. So, and as I said, she was the first one that really, you know, knocked my socks off as far as, you know, woozy. There was always woozy heroines before her as far as I was concerned. And then she was it as far as I was concerned after that.
And that's actually true because it's actually also my favourite moment in, I hate to say this, but in the newer film, was the moment between them because there's this real sweet connection between the two of them. And I really like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, keep going.
All right, so my number one is from 1977. Let's be very clear which one. 1977, Star Wars. Let's face it, Luke Skywalker is out to save the princess.
That's right.
I know. That's really gross,
you are my
Dave.
Only hope.
I mean, that's what he's doing.
Make me sick.
He's gone on a rescue mission to go save the princess. So it's the ultimate damsel in distress story. We didn't know that at that point.
Just, you know.
I don't care. It doesn't make it not true.
How come you guys? I had the Terminator, the original Terminator with Sarah Connor, because heck, Kyle Reese had to come and, you know, cross oceans of time to get to her, to save her. And I can't work out why you guys didn't pick her. She was the ultimate.
I never saw her as a damsel.
She was in the first one.
No, see, even in the first one, she's your Terminator fucker. You know what I mean? By the end of it, she took care of the problem, not anybody
else.
In the
did she?
Yeah. So I never saw her as a real damsel. Spoilers for a film that's 30 years old, people. But when Kyle Reese dies, she has to take matters into her own hands. She becomes tough at the end. She's the one who goes and kicks
the ass. That seems to be the theme, really, isn't it? You know, that ultimately they end up doing the saving. What do you think? I don't know.
Josh, what do you reckon?
What's this?
Sarah Connor, Damsel in Distress, first film?
In the first film, definitely.
Well, okay.
There you go.
Yeah. That's why she didn't cross my mind, because I was thinking...
Because, dude, in the first one, at no point does she really... Like, apart from right at the end where she presses the button, does she ever do anything. It's like, essentially, she is always running from it. And, I mean, it is until that last section of the film that she's forced to take control. So it's like, for the first three quarters, she's definitely a damsel in distress.
I went to my guru.
She's being saved from the Terminator.
Yeah, I went to my guru and I said, Katrina, Sensei, you know, how do I actually, you know, figure this out? And she said, you get your list and you say, which one would I just rush out and watch immediately, be able to watch straight away? And that's why the Terminator fell off the list there, because it was number six, but all the others I'd be happy to watch immediately.
We often have on the show honorary mentions as well, where we sit there and go, didn't quite make the list. Like one we were actually toying around with at one point, my lovely wife Katie and I were talking about, which was Kill Bill. Because she was a damsel, but she saved herself.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's why, and, you know, I was thinking also about Inception, and I was thinking about poor old Mal, but then I thought she was actually an extension, I believe, of Cobb. So
he was really her.
That's right. So I thought, well, that falls off. And then I was thinking Lynn Bracken from LA Confidential.
And then there's also Jamie Lee Curtis from the original Halloween film.
I almost went there.
Yeah, I almost went there too. But I thought it kind of came to my mind that by the end of that film, she's not being saved by anybody. She's kind of saving herself. You know, she's kind of on her own. It's only at the very end where Loomis comes in.
Maybe you've got to go back further in time.
That's why Errol Flynn came up. Because the traditional damsel in distress is an archetype that we don't like anymore. Because feminism actually kind of pushes it out of the way. And says, we don't want to be
We push that out of the way. And the void that is left is fulfilled by people like Bella Swan.
Oh, God, we have to keep going back.
I'm emotionally scarred by this.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, agree or disagree with anything that we've had to talk about today or on our feelings of Twilight or anything like that, you can send your feedback to feedback@filmactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02801131167. And if it's short and to the point, we'll even play it on the show. You can get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter or follow our Tumblr accounts or look at our fan page or, I don't know, do anything you want just by going to geekactually.com. There's a big follow us button and all of our links are there and you'll find everything you need to know about us. Josh, tell us a little bit more about where people can find more of you on the internet.
Well, there's Raw DLC, which is a gaming website. Make sure that you head over and check that out. We've chucked up all sorts of bizarre content. I've chucked up pieces that have made people relatively angry this week, talking about Gears of War and how I'm sick of people turning everything into an unnecessarily long prequel-based series when they could just end it at 3 and have a really good, solid piece of gaming as opposed to just cashing in on everything. But apart from that, there's heaps of other content up there as well, so make sure you go over and check that out. And then, of course, if you're into hip-hop and you want just a few words about new stuff that's coming out and new albums, mixtapes, things like that, just head over there and check it out, hiphopnetonline.com.
Fantastic. So, Robin, tell me, we've never actually asked you this, do you have like a web presence or anything like
that? Well, I am a woman of mystery, an enigma. And at this point in my career, anything you want to know about me, you will be able to find via you with the film action
and,
page.
And I absolutely do recommend go to geekactually.com and search for the Twilight articles. As I say, there's three of them up there now. There'll be a fourth one up this week. They are a fantastic read. And you basically don't need to watch Twilight films. Just read these articles. They'll get you through. <All right. laughs> They tell you everything you need to know about Twilight. All right. Got a couple of people we'd just like to shout out to. First of all, we should shout out to Richard because he couldn't make it here today. He's finishing the Japanese Film Festival today, so he should be back next week. He's been seeing, I think I spoke to him the other day, he'd watched three films back to back. I think it's all getting a little bit much after a while. But you can find out more of Richard Gray over at therealbits.com, or you can follow him on Twitter, DVDBits. You can find out more about what he's doing, and hopefully he'll be back next week. Charlie and Brad, good friends of ours, they run reboundradio.com. They've got several good podcasts over there, like Good Day Sir and Movie Matchup. Go check them out. And WeekendRonan.com is the home of The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L. And you can also find them on iTunes. They're a movie review show like us. They put up a whole bunch of new stuff recently. Find them on iTunes or go to WeekendRonan.com. They like to drink while they do their reviews, so it's always very interesting. They are really good fun. And we really do need to put a quick shout out to Josh Spencer, who did our cartoon artwork for our cover arts. You can find more of his work over at attackninja.blogspot.com. Right, there's all the housekeeping out of the way. How is that?
You're a star.
All right. We started the show, as you may have guessed, with a clip from the original 2008 Twilight, and that is about the level of that film. So if you've seen that and you think that looks great, go see more of it. If you think that looked pretty cheesy, you're probably right. We are closing the show, though, with I think you touched on this during the review, Robin, when you actually said the best thing about the Twilight films has been the music.
Absolutely.
And I agree with you, not just the choice of songs, but the actual scores.
I think the
scores have been really good. And in fact, my favorite score of the entire series was from the 2008 first film.
Yes.
I think Carter Burwell's score is phenomenal.
Yes.
And it really outclassed the rest of the film completely. We're going to finish with a track called I Know What You Are, which is actually the track that played under the scene.
Yes.
Which is a really good track.
Very evocative indeed. It is.
So we're going to go out with that track today. Josh, you got anything to add?
No.
Robin, have you got anything to add?
Oh, I've just been pleased and proud to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for joining us. It's been hell fun.
Absolutely. And we'll get you on again soon, I hope.
Okay.
All right. In the meantime, everybody, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.